This week on the Blue Crew, we are absolutely honored to welcome on a longtime NHL referee, reffed in over 1,300 regular season games, over 90 playoff games, two Winter Classics, and I think I'm missing one thing, an Olympics as well, right? And he now hosts the Snipes and Stripes podcast with Jeremy Roenick. And some people might not remember he did score a goal in the NHL, even though it was disallowed, which we'll get into. But welcome to the show, Tim Peel. Peeler, how's it going?
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, actually, you got him in the, I know you guys are a Ranger fan, but you got him in New York now, the guy that scored the goal was Bortuzzo. And Bortz and I would always laugh about that. It was hilarious.
I didn't want to start with it, but I guess we'll go into it. How do you not count that? Because that's the fucking funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. And for people that don't know the reference, can you just explain the story?
Yeah, absolutely. Bortuzzo was playing for the Blues. And he shoots it in, and usually when a defenseman shoots it in, he rims it around the board, so he shoots it kind of towards the net, and maybe off the end wall. And anyway, I was positioned off the corner of the boards, and I see it coming at me, and I'm like, the fucking puck's gonna hit me! Like, I can't jump because it's at waist level, and I can't duck, and I'm like, so I just took it, and. A lot of got me, you know, in the junk, and then
I thought it did.
And the crazy thing, so I fall back and I hit my head on the boards, not that hard. I kind of milked that part of it, but so anyway, all of a sudden I'm on all fours on my knees and my hands, and I hear the horn go off like the Blues scored. And the linesman comes over, he goes, "You okay, PLZ?" I go, "Yeah, yeah." I go, "Did that fucking puck just go in the net?" And he goes, "Yep." And I go, "Fuck me." And so Ray Borelli, the longtime trainer, comes out. He goes, "You okay?" I said, "I think I need to go to the dressing room for a few minutes." So I came back out, and it's got to be, this is the best part of the story. Like, it's on Roberto Luongo, Hall of Fame goaltender, one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. And I come back out onto the ice, and the first thing Lou says to me is, he goes, "Timmy, you okay?" I go, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "But guess what? For the rest of my life," I said, "I'm going to be able to say I scored on Roberto Luongo." Yeah, so the best part of the story, two nights later, I'm working the Blues in Chicago, and James Reimer is the backup goalie. So we're skating around warm-up. Luongo sees me, comes right up to me. He goes, "PLZ," he goes, "they won't even start me tonight because you're reffing our game." Reimer was a starting goaltender. So I got the puck in my office back here. The off-ice officials brought it in. It was hilarious. And, you know, you guys know my deal. I've controversy and a lot of good things and bad things and whatever. But I get home that night, and I'm laying in bed having a glass of wine with my wife. And she looks at me. She goes, "You're unbelievable." She goes, "Something happens and it's got to be you." And she goes, and in the city that you live in, St. Louis, you score a goal for the home team. the text messages was just going crazy. And I think Brett Hull's got 795 goals, whatever his number is. We'll say it's 795. I get a text message from the great 199, and I go to Tisha, my wife. I go, "I have finally arrived." I go, "Gretzky just texts me." He goes, "You've only got 794 goals to go to catch Brett Hull."
They should have had a, like they did for Bedard after his first goal, a chasing greatness. Tapio Wade Gretzky.
Exactly.
That's so good. That's such incredible. A good story.
That's unreal. It's funny. You mentioned how, you know, you score the goal and you've been a part of controversy a little bit. And then you look at other guys like Wes McCauley. He's also got that little – he's got that extra oomph to him, you know. Like a lot of refs, they just keep to themselves. They don't really try to say much in the media or whatnot. How do you feel about refs maybe like having a little bit of their own juice, like becoming their own personalities? I think that – I mean, listen, I'm trying to bring more light to the referees. I think that my bit basically started because a lot of people go to the games as refs and dress and make fun of them. They'll have like a blind pull, they'll do the thing. But I thought it'd be even better to just root for you guys.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love every second of it. The guys on the ice love it. We always, you know, make eye contact with the ref. They do the fist bumps. They love it. But I'd love to see a little bit more a color from refs, you know, a little bit more excitement from them. I think it's great when they do the announcing and whatnot. But what do you think about
that? Well, you remember Ed Hockley, He was the NFL official. He had the big arms. He had his, he'd have his shirt tailored to his arms. And
oh yeah.
And Joe West, the umpire, that guy. But that's a dying breed now. The league doesn't want it. They don't want the officials, you know, to go back to 1994 was the work stoppage. 94 with the referees. And when Gary Bettman took over as the commissioner, the first thing he did was take the names off the backs. Because when the referees locked out, they hadn't come to terms in their CBA, so they weren't working. They were using replacement officials, aka scab referees. Because I remember back then, I got hired in 98, and I was approached to be one of these replacement referees. I was living in New Brunswick, Canada at the time, and I remember my dad said to me, he goes, so are you thinking about becoming a replacement ref or a scab ref? I go, well, you know, I really want to get to the NHL. And he goes, do you want to walk in the front door of Maple Leaf Gardens or in the back door? Because if you're going as a scab or as a replacement, he says, you're walking in the back door. And so that kind of resonated with me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. And it's funny because all these replacement referees that they brought on back in 1994 with promises, hey, we're going to look, you know, we may keep you on. They kept none of them on. Not one of them ever lasted. As soon as the strike was over by the refs, they were back. They were gone. But the point of the story is they didn't like that Kerry Frazier had a lot of notoriety. Don Koharski, Mick Magoo, Bill McCreary. They didn't like that the officials had their names on the back and that the fans knew who they were. So as soon as Gary Bettman took over, he took the nameplates off, and then we became a number. So it's the way it is. I agree with you, Avery. I think it'd be great for the sport. It's, you know, it adds a little, you know, when Wes does the announcements, it puts a little mustard on the hot dog. Hey, we're in the entertainment business. It's okay to be a little colorful in that, but they don't want to see that.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And, you know, speaking of the spectacle, I haven't said this out loud yet, but I feel like it would add a little drama to the stadium series. You know, Rangers play the Islanders, Devils play the Flyers. Obviously, we're going to see a fucking coach's challenge at some point. If they give, you know, Laviolette and Lane Lambert a red little challenge flag to throw on the ice for the spectacle of the outdoor game, like we got to get a little bit more dramatic if we're going to have a review every game, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great idea. Maybe Wes will be doing one of those games because nobody does an announcement better than Wes McCauley. So.
Well, I wanted to bring up one particular moment that you have with the Rangers. Yeah. And, you know, obviously a lot of Ranger fans are listening to this thinking like, when are you going to ask how they screw the Rangers over all the time? I'm not going to ask that. That's not where I'm going. I'm actually going the opposite. So I don't know if a lot of people remember this, but you were actually a hit in HBO 24/7 Rangers Flyers Road to the Winter Classic. Mm-hmm. And you were on the call in that crazy game in Arizona. Brad Richards scores with like 0.1 second left. And you have to announce to the crowd that the goal is a good goal, right? Like that's a crazy, crazy buzzer beater. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, obviously you get that call right, you know, which is first of all, the best, most important thing, but what is it like announcing to a home crowd, something that favors a road team in that kind of environment? Because I feel like that's when people lose their shit, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, it's great. I loved like, so to the people listening, Montreal and New York were like 1A, 1B as far as the buildings that I like to work in. Like it was really close. Like I got to probably give the lead to Montreal, but the Madison Square Garden was one of my favorite buildings to work in. And, you know, fans they probably can't understand it because I guess we're probably a little sick as referees anyway because we take a lot of abuse. But when they'd start chanting at Madison Square Garden, ref, you suck, ref, you suck, I'd laugh inside. I'd giggle. Yeah. I'd be like, this is awesome. I'm like, I grew up in a trailer park in Hampton, New Brunswick, and was adopted, came from nothing. And now I'm reffing at Maple Leaf or Madison Square Garden, and I've got 18,000 fans chanting ref you suck. So wherever you had to make those announcements, whether it went one way or the other, I enjoyed it, and I loved my time in New York. I was texting with Micheletti the other day because I was watching that game, the LA game. Joe Micheletti, I've known him for years. He used to be a member at the golf course I'm at here in St. Louis, and we became friends. And he'd always knock on the door every game that I was reffing, and he'd open up the door and he'd look in and he goes, "Peelsy, don't fuck this one up tonight." I said, "Thanks, Joe." And he'd leave. And that was our routine. And, but I'm watching the game the other night, and Garrett Rank's handing out tens like they're it's Christmas.
We still don't know why Mika got one. I have no idea.
And I'm just like, this is a big game. And it doesn't matter whether it's a big game or it's, you know, Columbus and Chicago on a Sunday afternoon. But this is LA Rangers, two marquee markets. And a lot of people were tuning in to see this game. And he's handing out these 10-minute misconducts. And listen, I will back the officials all day long. I remember players would say, you know, what's the difference between a 2 and a 10? And I'd say, you know, a 2, it's getting a little overboard. But when you give a 10, it's because you've become abusive. It's okay to have emotion. We need more emotion in our game. But when that emotion turns to abuse and maybe it gets a little too personal, then that's when we can handle 10-minute misconducts. So I don't know what they said to Garrett Rank, but all of a sudden, within a matter of a couple minutes, we had two guys in the box for 10s. You got one of the best players in the Rangers. I didn't give a lot of 10s in my career, and I don't remember Zibanejad even saying anything to me his whole career. Yeah. He doesn't say that much, so I just hope the refs don't become too sensitive. It's okay for players to yell. And, you know, I didn't like it this summer when the coaches got brought into Chicago and they were told by the league and by Wacom and Coley Campbell, hey, if you guys yell and scream too much on the bench, you're going to get fined $25,000. And we've seen the Anaheim coach get fined. We've seen somebody else. And I like that part of the game. Like, it made me a better ref. Like, if I saw a coach that hardly ever said anything and he's getting wound up, then I'm like, I probably missed something. Like, because he usually, you know, if Vigneault, like I loved Vigneault, and a lot of our guys didn't. They didn't like him. He thought he whined too much, and he did. But I liked him, and it's okay. Like, I liked it when Torts would engage with me, and we need more of that. We're losing. You know, I was at the. I took my family to the Blues Blackhawks game on Saturday. We were in Chicago for my son's hockey, and Kelly Chase, who's got leukemia now. He's a good friend of mine. He's a longtime fighter in the NHL, and he's like, is this not a? It's supposed to be a rivalry, Chicago St. Louis. There were five. There might have been five hits in the game, and Braden Shen probably threw all five of them. So we can't take that aspect out of our game. We can't take the hitting. We can't take the emotion. I see fans around the league get upset with one of your guys, Jacob Trouba. I'm like, well, keep your fucking head up. Keep your head up, because guess what? Trouba's not making. This isn't contact to the head. He's stepping up because you've got your head down. That we can't lose that. That's my rant about physicality and emotion in the game.
He said it best. Trouba said, like, if you want to change me, change the rule. Like, he's just playing by how the rules are written, right? Like, I think that was the best response he had with Vince Mercogliano on that exclusive piece he did.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, Peeler, if you know me, I'm the number one fan of the refs. I'll always give the benefit of the doubt to the refs. Do you feel like, and Pat McAfee touched on a little bit, how NHL is the only sport where the refs will make makeup calls, where they know they'll hold themselves accountable for something. Did you ever feel like you were in a situation where you made a bad call and that the next play that happened that would go against the call that you made, you would make the call, whether it was something light? Like, let's just say you called a penalty on the Rangers and it was a bad call, and then one guy gets slashed in the hands and it's kind of minuscule, but would you make that call because you feel like you had messed up beforehand?
Yeah, and you know what? It's not just hockey. It's all sports. And I use this analogy: if there's an umpire working an MLB game, and you see it all the time, and he calls a strike a ball. It's catches the corner. Catcher looks at him. Pitcher looks at him like, "Come on, man, that was a strike." And maybe not the next pitch, but the pitch after that, it's actually outside the plate by an inch or two. All of a sudden, boom, he gets a strike. It's not managing the game, but it's doing what's right for the game. And there's times when, you know, fans hate to hear this. The league probably doesn't like when I say, you know, do a makeup call. I'm not saying that we didn't call a penalty that wasn't a penalty. I couldn't call a penalty against Trouba tonight, and then I didn't like that call. So who are the Rangers playing tonight?
They got Toronto.
And all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, I got to give Toronto a penalty now, and I give Matthews a tripping or a slash, and he didn't do anything. There's a penalty there. All I'm saying is your antennas go up. And you're like, I better not miss the next call against the other team. I just made a soft call. It's happened. Every ref's going to do it. You make a call. You thought the stick got in on the hands. They show the replay. It missed his hands. You call the hook. You're like, okay, I cannot miss one on the other team because now I've called a penalty against the Rangers that was a soft call. Maybe the puck went, you know, they scored in the power play. Maybe they didn't, but you're, so it's not so much a makeup call. It's because the penalty still has to be there. Because if you continually went out there and made makeup calls, Stephen Walken, the director of officiating, is calling you going, I don't even see the penalty. Like,
yeah.
Instead of saying, yeah, I could see it. And you know what? Stick was on the hands. Maybe it wasn't a whack hard enough. That's probably not the standard we want called consistently. But yeah, I can see why you called that.
Well, it's also like, you know, anyone who's watched hockey long enough also knows, like, you know, Rangers Toronto, for example, tonight, if the Rangers have had three power plays, like, you know, at some point, like, everyone's looking for Toronto to get one, right? Like, it's kind of just how the game goes.
And it's the same thing. And it's a great question. We've seen that for 100 years, as long as hockey's been going on. You get three, four. Now, but I've had games where I've called 7 penalties in a row against a team. And because the other team hasn't done anything. So the league, like Stephen Walken, the director of officiating, he's like, hey, if there's 7 penalties in a row against one team, then you call them. But you better not miss one against the other team. You better not miss one. Because you've been kind of shoving it up the other team's ass all night by calling 7 in a row. That other team at some point has got to do something wrong. It's hockey. There's got to be a trip or a hook or high stick or something. That's when, as officials, you have to be better and you've got to step up and really be focused and say, I cannot miss a penalty here because I've called so many penalties against the other team. But you don't go out, you know, and call something that's not a penalty. Like my hot mic incident. I thought Arvidsson tripped the guy. I thought he tripped him. I saw him go in. I saw the guy go ass over tea kettle. I thought Arvidsson clipped him with the skate. I didn't just call a penalty because I wanted to call it. And none of our refs do that. So, but there's times, like I hear different people are, you know, our game is good when there's mistakes being made. Can you imagine a National Hockey League game where the referees make the perfect call every night? The players
that suck.
Let the players make the perfect play every night. The goalies make the perfect save. Everything is perfect. Well, guess what? That's going to be boring to watch because there's no emotion in the game. It's okay when people make mistakes. It's okay when there's turnovers, when a ref makes a call. You know, we've got the mechanisms in place now. When I was reffing, you couldn't review a double minor. So if Jacob Trouba high sticks Zibanejad at his own player, but I thought it was Austin Matthews that got it, and I give Matthews a double minor, I had to eat that. And you would just pray that double minor, that they wouldn't score in the power play because he got high stick by his own player. But they can review that now. There's so many things they can review as far as goalie interference, headshots, offside goals, high sticks. So But there still is emotion in our game, and that's what we want. We want emotion in our game.
Well, I think that's a really good point that you make, and I wasn't even like planning on going this way, I guess, but I think every sport needs human nature and human mistakes, right? You just kind of said that, like in baseball, you know, everyone wants the robotic umps now, which is whatever. I'm not even going to go into that. That's why I'm not a baseball fan.
Right.
You know, the umps obviously have become a little bit absurd in the way they officiate a game. NBA, don't even get me started, because if you breathe, you get thrown out of a game.
Yeah.
And I think in the NHL, what pisses fans off is when there is a human mistake and then there is a review and they don't feel that that review fixed what the mistake was. I think that is what fuels the NHL angst, right? It's the fact that we have all this technology right now and they feel like we're still not getting it right. So I guess in your position, are there moments where you have to make, like, let's say you go up to Toronto and you have to now announce what Toronto gives you, but you might not agree with it. You're put in a tough position, right? Like, how do you go about that?
Yeah, you know, it's a great point you brought up, and JR and I were talking this morning, Roenick, and we were talking because Gabranson just got suspended for a game, right?
Perfect example, yeah.
And the refs on the ice gave Cousins, mm-hmm. a 5-minute major for boarding. Well, because it's a major penalty now, you've got to get on the headset and review it with Toronto. Couple of years ago, you made the call, five in a game for boarding, boom, he's gone. And now it's reviewed. Well, Toronto felt that that wasn't a 5-minute major. I got a big problem with that. And I think obviously Gabranson does too. But to me, that's a 5-minute boarding penalty. That's mm-hmm. the hit that we're trying to take out of the
textbook.
Game. Textbook. It's a 5-minute major. And guess what would have happened? If they had a stuck with the referee's call on the ice, Gabranson wouldn't be suspended for the next game because Cousins would have been thrown out of the game. Gabranson is putting in his head, hey, I'm playing Florida in a couple weeks. I'll get Cousins again. He wasn't going after anybody else on Florida. He was going after Cousins.
Yeah.
And so it's tough because – hockey ops, they've got a tremendous amount of experience with the guys that they have in there. But sometimes you've got to let the guys that are in the heat of the action, that they've got a better feel of the game, of what's going on out there. Because here's a prime example where I felt the referees got it right, and then all of a sudden Toronto made it. So to your point, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah.
If you're the referee, you're making that announcement, you're going in the back of your head, I really don't agree with this call, but
this
is what I got to say. So.
And you take all the heat for it.
And you take all the heat for it. Because I saw that on social media. The refs got it wrong. The refs got it wrong. Well, no, the refs didn't get it wrong. They made the right call. It was Toronto that changed it from a 5-minute major to a 2-minute minor. So
it's so funny. If it were me, like, on the headset, I'd be like, fuck, guys, are you sure? Because I'm about to get yelled at.
Don't kill the messenger. It was Toronto. Yeah, exactly.
That'd be so funny if a ref like got on the mic for the arena and was like, I promise it wasn't my call, but here's the situation. That'd be so good.
But I had a question. You were talking a little bit about Toronto and the reviews. So do they have the final say when you're on the headset? Is that up to them, full discrepancy?
They do. They have the final say. Wow. On goaltender interference, they have the final say on majors, head contact, anything that's reviewable now, Toronto's got the final say. And
now
I agree with most of it because we're looking at it at an iPad that's 6 by 8 inches big. They've got 10 TVs up there with 4 different angles that they're able to look at with an ex-referee in the situation room, along with Chris King, Rod Pasma, Kay Whitmore, all these other guys. So 99.9% of the time, I think Toronto does a great job. I do. It's, you know, what I've noticed about since I've got into doing media or podcasts or whatever, referees aren't allowed to have an opinion. and the only people that are allowed to have an opinion are journalists or ex-players. And as soon as I have my opinion, it's like I'm told to shut the fuck up and not say anything. And I don't get that. I have no understand. I have no idea where that. So I'm hopefully going to change that. But so when I give an opinion, sometimes it ruffles people's feathers. And I'm like, I'm not saying that you're, you know, like, we, you know, I was talking about Toronto. Toronto does an amazing job. They've watched 1,400 games a year. They're dialed in. They, you know, there's a play, goalie interference. They've got a library of plays. They'll go, hey, that was similar to a play. They're so good. That was similar to a play 18 months ago in Pittsburgh. Pull that one up. Okay, how do they? They're on it. This isn't just like, hey, they're flipping a coin. Oh, we'll do it. You know what? Rangers need a break tonight. We'll call them. No. Well, these guys, they take pride in their work. They're good at their job. But you're just not. It's like if I say something on social media about a team, that fan base is going to get upset. It's the same thing in hockey. Whether you're the referee or the situation room, they make a call. 50% of the fan base is going to be pissed off, and the other 50%, which is the other team, is going to be like, "Yeah, that was the right call." So that's the world.
I love when you put your opinion out there. I'm a fan of it. I'm not just saying that because you're a guest on our show. I actually genuinely mean
it. No, I appreciate it. I'm trying to just give my insight sometimes, like, you know, the Perron play. Like, I see you guys see Alan Walsh yet last night all over social media. He's losing his mind. I'm a little surprised Perron got six games. I am. Yeah. I got to be honest. You know, I'm not necessarily always in agreement with Alan Walsh because he is certainly – he's taken the path that he's going to protect his players at any cost, and good for him. That's why he's been successful. That's why his players, Marc-Andre Fleury's one of his clients, David Perron, one of his clients. He loves his clients and he's going to go to the wall for them. So I don't have a problem with that. Am I a little surprised that Perron got six games when he's never been suspended in 1,100 games played? And yeah, the intent was there, but guess what? At the end of the day, Zub came out and played the next shift. So he obviously didn't get him that hard. I could have lived with three games, maybe four games. But once again, you know, George Parros and the rest of the Department of Player Safety, they've got a library of, okay, we gave this guy this for this. We boom, and they just don't look at it and make a decision in 15 minutes. They put a lot of thought into it, and they look at it and then they all depart and say, let's get back together in a few hours. You guys think about what, and that's how it works. So you're never going to keep the fan, that fan base happy. Everybody else in the league or all the other teams will say, yeah, I deserve six games, but the Detroit Red Wing fans are going to say that the league hates Detroit, which is not the case.
Yeah. I mean, We're speaking from a fan base that, you know, I think the Rangers got like, what were they, like 0-14 on challenges this year so far? They were something bad like that. It was like, you know, there's so many memes and GIFs on like Twitter that it's like screw the Rangers button.
Well, you know what, Johnny, that's I'm glad you brought that up because that's why the Rangers need to hire an ex-referee to be their coach's challenge person. I've been saying this for years. It blows me away that nobody has done it. I do not understand it.
Inside job.
Yeah, you've got a referee that's been on the ice, knows how the league thinks, knows what they usually take back on goalie interference or offsides or whatever, that's lived it, that's breathed it, that knows, you know, has a body of work that is, you know, what's usually going to happen.
Is this your pitch, Peeler? Is this your pitch?
No, it's not. I'm not moving. But yet you've got a guy, lots of times, you've got a guy or a gal in the video coach's room that hasn't even played at a high level before.
Yeah.
And they're saying, yeah, you know, you should challenge this for goalie interference. Well, did you ever play in the – I'm not saying you have to play in the league. I'm not saying that. We got lots of good coaches that never played in the National Hockey League that are really good coaches in the NHL. I'm just saying you should have some body of experience to be able to be a coach's challenge, you know, to be able to call down to Peter Laviolette and say, hey, I think you should look at this play. So,
yeah, no, it's a really good point. Honestly, you actually might be onto something there, and maybe Chris Drury is a loyal listener to our show. So maybe he'll.
Yeah. I love Chris. So Chris, I can do it from home. I can do it from the basement in St. Louis.
But I actually got, sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, I'm happy for the Ranger fans though. Cause like I mentioned earlier, My top two favorite buildings to work in. The most fun I ever had in New York was, I think it was 2014. The Rangers and the Flyers played Game 7 at Madison Square Garden.
I was there.
And you guys were like in grade 6 at the time. But
no, I was a senior in high school.
And it was Game 7, Philly Rangers. And I'm in the dressing room an hour and a half before the game, and the building was rocking before the game. An hour and a half, let's go Rangers. And I'm sitting there, and I come out of the tunnel, and I'm like, I do not need a Red Bull tonight because I am ready to go. And Chris Rooney, it was kind of like the new rules were in, but you could kind of call less in the playoffs. And to be fair and honest about with the players, when it's a game 7, you don't usually see a lot of penalties. It's not because the referees put away their whistle. It's because the coaches and the players in the dressing room are like, we cannot take a penalty. Yeah. We can't take any penalties in this game.
That's a good point.
And Chris and I called one penalty the entire game, and Zach Ronaldo and I have texted about it since then. He was playing for the Flyers, and the Ranger player, I forget who it was, didn't even have the puck. Zach just steamrolled him in front of the position. So we gave him an interference penalty in the first period, and that was the only penalty the entire game. And nobody was talking about us at the end of the game. They were just talking about what a great game it was. So
they're talking about Daniel Carcillo being the game 7 hero. And Benoit Pouliot.
Was that who the – oh, Benoit. That's right. I remember.
It was like the same exact goal. It was, right side of the ice if you're watching on TV. Zuccarello had the first pass, like a spinorama from the corner, back post to Carcillo. And then I'm pretty sure Brassard had the same kind of pass to Pouliot in the same period.
What was the score of that game? I forget.
2-1. 2-1 game.
Yeah. Yeah,
great game.
Yeah, it was.
I only got one more. Avery, you got anything else before we kind of wrap it up here?
Yeah, let me sling this last one.
Sure.
If you could add, so it's a three-parter. So you have to add a rule to the league right now. You have to remove one, and you have to change one.
No more rules. We don't need any more rules. I was glad this year Yeah, no, and they're a great question. Questions that you have, Avery. But the last, it seemed like the last 6, 7, 8 years, every summer, you know, we get ready for the season. Here's the different rule interpretations. They would change this or tweak that. And I'm like, our game is in such a good place right now. We don't need any more rules. A rule that I would change, and it hasn't happened yet, but it will happen one day. I would hate to see the Vegas Knights and the New York Rangers in the Stanley Cup Finals, and it's Game 7 at Madison Square Garden. It's a tied game late in the third period. We may be going into overtime in the third period, and Jacob Trouba goes to bring the puck up around the boards, but it flips on his side, and he puts it over the glass, and he gets called for a delay game penalty with a minute and a half to go in the game of a tied hockey game. He sits in the box, and all of a sudden, Jack Eichel scores in the power play. Boom, they win the cup, and Truba's got to come out of the box and think about all summer just because the puck flipped up on the end and went in the stands. I wish they would bring it back where it was our discretion whether a player did it intentionally or not, because it hasn't happened yet, but you guys have been around long enough. It will happen at some point during the playoffs one year where a team will lose a game. Now, everyone say, well, that's the rule. They didn't lose a game. But all I'm saying is these guys are so good. They're so talented. They're so smart. They know how to rim a puck. When a puck goes over the glass, that's because it's flipped up on its side, and it wasn't intentional. So I would like to see that changed. And to tweak anything, I can't think of anything. You know, maybe I like it where our sport's at right now. I like the rules. I like the NHL standard that we have that enables our players to play at a you know, watching, as you guys know, and you guys have been Ranger fans or hockey fans for a long time, this is the fastest our game has ever been. And it's end to end, and it's fast, it's exciting. And so they've done a really good job of eliminating the, you know, the hooks in the hands and the water skiing when you'd hook a guy in the waist and so on. So I think our game's in a good place. I don't think we need to tweak anything else.
I have a rule change, and it's half of a joke, but I'm curious what you think of it. If there's a penalty on the goalie, you throw the goalie in the box and make the backup get in for 2 minutes.
Well, if you want to increase scoring, that's a way to do it.
Imagine like a team that with a e-bug in net, and the goalie takes a penalty and has to go, and the e-bug has to do the PK.
Well, last year, whoever the backup was for the St. Louis Blues probably would have got more playing time than George Pennington. So
it happened my senior year in college. It happened. We were playing Air Force, and our goalie Garrett Metcalf, who's now, you know, in Utah on the coast, he got put in the box. It was like the funniest bit. It went viral. It was like, you know, one of the funniest videos I've ever seen. Yeah, it was so good. Great. But
well, good luck to make that change, because I don't think that's ever going to happen. But
I was just joking around. Yeah. But great question, Avery, and great response, Peeler. But my last one, and this one is, you know, I want to be like kind of careful how I word it, because I mean it in like a positive way.
Oh, hey, listen, you can ask me anything. I'm good.
No, it's not even like about like refereeing or anything. It's essentially like the biggest like fuck you match you've gotten in with a guy that, like, after the fact that it's over, like, you grab a beer and it's like totally fine. But like in that moment, it's kind of like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy.
Yeah.
But I don't mean it in a negative way. You know, it's like kind of like a heat of the moment, but all love.
Yeah. I can't remember where we met for. Oh, well, I can remember. I do remember this, actually. it was my first year in the league, and, you know, I was trying to make a name for myself. I'm working with Bill McCreary and Don Koharski and all these veterans. And you know, I definitely 100% came in the league too cocky and thinking I had to make a name for myself. And I wish the Tim Peel that had been the last 10, 12 years of my career would have been like that early in my career and not take things so serious. And Steve Yzerman said something to me in Nashville, and I kicked him out of the game. And it was my first year in the league.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And Shanahan came over to me. He's like, Peelsy, like, what are you doing? I'm like, he can't talk to me like that, blah, blah, blah. And so the Red Wings were staying overnight, and I go to Tootsie's in Nashville downtown after the game. And I ran into Joey Kosher, and Kosh is a great guy, and we're friends to this day, and we're drinking beers, and we come outside on the sidewalk, and we're getting a hot dog, Joey and I, and, you know, 2 a.m, and all of a sudden, here comes Steve. He's walking up the street. Joey's like, Steve, Peelsy wants to talk to you, and Steve just looked at me. He's like, and he didn't say anything. He was pissed at me for a long time, and rightfully so. Like, I need to show Steve Yzerman more respect than what I did that game. It was a mistake that I made. It was the only mistake. The hot mic thing, I don't even regret that, because things that get said on the ice was 100 times worse than what I said.
I think that was blown out of proportion for what it's worth. I didn't even want to ask about it.
But kicking out a player of Yzerman's stature or status, I overreacted, and it bugged me for a long time. And finally I got a chance to talk to him, and I apologized. And then last summer I visited Darren Pang at his house in Lake House in Michigan. And Panger's like, hey, we're playing. He told me this before I came up, but he's like, hey, we got a great foursome at Oakland Hills in a couple days. He goes, and this was the foursome. It was Panger, myself, Kenny Holland, and Steve Yzerman. Steve's a member there. And I'm like, I'm golfing with these guys. I'm like, how cool is this? This is a kid that grew up in New Brunswick, and shitty ass trailer park, and I'm golfing with Yzerman, Kenny Holland, and Panger right now. And it's Steve and I never talked about it. It's water under the bridge. And I just, but it bugged me, and it still does, as you can tell by me going on about it. But because I have so much respect for the man, that but I was a young cocky ref that that thought I knew it all, which obviously I certainly didn't.
No, that's a good one. And you don't even see any players get thrown out of games anymore. It doesn't even happen.
Not very often. It doesn't happen very often. You know, a lot has changed that the players, like I remember the last couple of years of my career, people were like, what's Connor McDavid like? What's Austin Matthews like? I don't even really know Johnny. Like they don't really, you don't see them talking to referees. It was a very common thing where players would come over and you know, sometimes it was fuck you back. Other times it was, you know, hey, what about this? They don't really, the younger players right now, they just want to play hockey and they're really not concerned about the officiating and they kind of leave that to their coach. So good or bad, that's just kind of the way it is now.
I was always a buddy-buddy with the ref kind of guy. I always crushed over there.
You were sucking up to the ref, were
always,
you?
Always.
I love that there's a lot of respect that some of the coaches will have. They'll put the referees' names. You'll see it inside the bench. They'll put all the referees' full names and numbers in the benches so the players know to, you know, talk to you guys by your first name and have a, you know, some type of respect for you guys. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I like that too, Avery. They started to do that the last few years, certainly because there's more young officials in the game. But what I want the fans to know is the referees really, you know, we respect the players. And I'm going to tell you one quick story before we leave, because I want you to understand how a referee such as myself thought. I was refereeing Columbus in Montreal one night, and Nick Foligno, who I had a tremendous amount of respect for, I loved Marcus, but his dad, Mike Foligno, was the head coach when I was in the American League, and we'd make mistakes as a ref. You're in the minors, and he was always like, Timmy, we're all in this together. We're all trying to get to the NHL, and he was just always so good to me. And I was a Leaf fan growing up, so I liked his dad. You know, I liked Mike, and so I always had a soft spot for Marcus and Nick. And one night I gave Nick a penalty in Montreal, and he's going to the box and he goes, you don't fucking respect me. You don't respect me. And it bugged me because I respected Nick Foligno a lot. He fought, he scored, he was the leader of that team in Columbus. And like a month went by before I was going to see Columbus again. And it was actually in Columbus, and I dropped my ref bag off before the game. And I go to the other officials. I didn't even tell them where I was going. I said, I'll be back in 15 minutes. So I go down and I knock on Tortorella's door. And Bradshaw opens the door and he's like, hey, Peelsy, what's up? And I go, can you get Nick Foligno? I want to speak to him. So I brought him in and I said to Nick, I go, you said the other night that I don't have any respect for you. And I said, I just want you to know that couldn't be further from the truth. I respect you so much. You're one of my favorite guys. You're the leader of this team, da da da. And he's like, I know, Peelsy. And we hugged him and he left. And Tortorella looked at me, he goes, he loved it, right? And Torts goes, we fucking need more of that. That's awesome. Yeah. But I just wanted to know, like, when a player would lose his shit or, you know, and maybe cross the line, I'd look at them and go, hey, man, we're all in this together out here. Like, we're all trying to make the game better. We're all going to make mistakes. It's not, nothing is done on purpose. We don't miss a call on purpose. It just organically happens. It's a fast game. Mistakes are made. So our officials have the utmost respect for the players. And one other quick story, because I do like this story. When my hot mic incident happened that morning, yeah. I'm flying home, and my phone is blowing up, and I get this call across my on my phone, and it's a Columbus number. I don't recognize the number, and I answer the phone, and it's David Clarkson. And,
oh, I heard this one. Yeah, it's a great story.
And Clarkson's like, he hated refs. Fuck, he hated referees. And I thought he was going to say, hey, Peelsy, it fucking looks good on you, blah, blah, blah. Well, it was the complete opposite. And we've had a beer since then because he was in St. Louis for the Suns team. And he's like, whenever I saw your name on the board in Columbus or Jersey or wherever I played, I knew I had one of the best refs in the league, but I knew I had one of the fairest refs, and I just wanted you to know that. And so it was so nice to hear, because all of a sudden I thought this guy literally hated my guts. Mm-hmm. And then I found out, well, actually, he actually respected me. It was just it was like Timu Solani, JR, and I had him on our show, and Timu would chirp sometimes. And he said, Timmy, sometimes if I wasn't into the game and I could just feel like I didn't have it tonight, I'd start yelling at the refs to get me into the game. So that's where our officials have to differentiate emotion from abuse, because sometimes players, that's just how they get pumped up and how they get into the game more. So,
yeah, no, and I want to add to that as well, Tim, because I texted Michael Delzato telling him that you were coming on the show today, and he was, you know, he said, I always was a big fan of his. He was respectful as a ref, and you were always able to have a conversation with him on the ice. Tell him I say hi.
Yeah, I loved Mike. I just wanted, you tell him, I just wanted to live in his shoes for one day so I could date every hot supermodel in New York, okay?
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
I loved Michael. We had some beers one night. They had the dad's trip and the dads were with him in Nashville, and he had all the dads came out, obviously, and we were at Tootsie's upstairs, and it was the night after the game, and everyone was hanging out, and I was drinking with his dad. And yeah, just, you know what? That's a great thing about our sport, is that you could get into a fuck you session with a coach or a player on the ice, and as soon as the game's over, 99.9% of the time, it's like you're buying each other beers, you're laughing about it. And that's the great thing about hockey people. They're just tremendous people.
Yeah, 100%. Besides Stevie Y. But,
he is.
No, I'm just kidding. But thank you so much, Tim, for coming on. And is there anything you want to shout out? I know you guys got a big interview tomorrow night.
You know, Jeremy Roenick, the legend, he certainly had some controversy in his career and post-career. And him and I teamed up a couple months ago. And it's called Snipes and Stripes. You can catch it on Apple. And yeah, we're having fun with it. We've got a Vander Kane on tomorrow night, actually. So that should be a good one. And just having fun. So I appreciate you guys having me on. I follow you guys both on Twitter, and always love the stuff that you guys post.
Yeah, I love when I get a notification for you at like 2 a.m. after you had a couple glasses of wine.
See, you know what? That's a great way to end, because I gotta develop an app that you have to blow into your phone before you send a text to make sure that because I have gotten in trouble a few times, especially during the playoffs when you're just starting at 6 o'clock, and it's, you know, we started at 6 in St. Louis and it's going till 1 a.m. I'm watching every game every night, and you're opening that second bottle of wine and you're tweeting, you're like, yeah, that probably wasn't a good idea. So,
and there's always that one call that someone's going to tweet at you or whatever, and you're just getting right into it with them. I love it.
Well, so I want to find it. I want to find it really quick before he hops off. There was like one exchange I think we had. Peeler, what's your handle again? It's MC Peel. There was one. It was like 3 a.m. We were talking about some call. I got to find it. It's so good. Let's see here. Let's see.
Did you see my call on TNT? What'd you think of the form there?
Oh, I did see that. That was awesome. Your form was great. No, you've never referenced
Jody Shelley, right? Said I had great form. What's that?
Jody, yeah, I saw that. Jody said that. Hey, that's fantastic. No, you've never refereed though, right?
No, never.
No. You just got the jersey, and that's awesome.
I just know the game. Justin, I just know the game.
Yeah, I saw Jody. Jody's a great guy. I saw him give you props for that. That's fantastic.
Oh, it was about about the Ottawa coaching situation.
It was my video.
Yeah, it was because I tweeted that I like bet my life on the Senators to make the playoffs, and you're like, "Come on, Johnny, you know your shit, man. This is brutal." And then we're going about the coaches. It's 1:03 in the morning. We're going back and forth about the Ottawa coaching stuff.
Well, 1 o'clock's not bad.
But like. But, like, realistically, I don't give a shit about the Ottawa coaching staff. You know, like,
no, I don't either, but I'm surprised he's still got a job there. I don't know. That's disappointing. Ottawa, you know, like, I've known Keith Kachuk for 20-plus years, and I've known Brady and Matthew since they're 4 or 5 years old, and it's killing Brady to be in that, you know, he's wearing him out because he has so much pride as being the captain of that team. And I feel bad for like they've got too good of a team to be last in the Eastern Conference. They got to be better than that. So
yeah,
we'll see.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much. I gotta hop in the shower quick and get to the garden. So yeah, appreciate you. And, you know, we'll keep in touch and whatnot. So I'm sure there'll be a controversial call that I'll tweet about you at you tonight.
Yeah, have fun. I'm going down to the Blues and the Blackhawks are playing tonight. It's Hockey Fights Cancer Night in St. Louis. And my good friend Kelly Chase has been diagnosed with leukemia. So I've been visiting him a fair amount. So we've got a suite tonight with a lot of his friends. And unfortunately, he's not going to be there. But they're gonna show a video of him that he did from the hospital. So it gives right now it should be a pretty emotional night. So enjoy your game and I'll do the same. I'll probably have a few tonight. So I try to stay off Twitter later on this evening. So
I'll turn the notifications off. Thanks, Felix.